You've got the Nights and Weekends podcast with your hosts, Craig Hewitt and Ken Wallace. We're building real businesses, baby. Go pour yourself a drink and pop in those earbuds. We've got work to do.
Hey, man.
Yo, yo.
Yeah.
Is there a Justin with us? Is he with us?
Can you guys hear me?
We can.
We can hear you.
But there's some weird trick of the internet where it sounds like you have some kind of UK accent.
I think you insulted him.
Wow. Moment of silence there.
Hey, can you guys hear me?
We can. We can hear you.
Okay, great. All right. Okay, do I sound okay?
Except for the accent, you're great.
Oh, nice. I'll ignore your attempt at humor.
Nice. It's always an attempt.
Yeah, that's what that was, yeah.
So how do you guys do it? Do you just like put everything in, or do you edit? Like we just shove everything in. We only edit stuff that's really, really offensive.
That's pretty much the way we do it.
That's pretty much our target, yeah. No, nice. I don't know. I mean, Ken, I don't know how much you and Justin have talked about. You know, we really try to be pretty sort of, I don't want to say raw in a bad way, but, you know, pretty real and kind of talk about what's going on in our business, what's working, what's not, what we're struggling with. And hopefully people can learn from what we're talking about.
I like the fact that you're both in the space that I was when I started texting with Plugio. So I suppose it was a few months after starting, but it was just about that time when I was basically bootstrapping the product, and it was a lot of fun to talk about it on the shows and just talk about the pain of it. And I believe that, Ken, you may have heard some of that pain.
I did.
But for some reason, you still decided to go for it.
You know, I listened to the first 200 episodes of your show. It was right after the wife episode, your 200th show.
Yeah.
That I kind of had to I just had too many podcasts like to subscribe to.
Yeah.
And I was trying to reduce the number of hours I was in the car commuting. And so it's like I can only listen to so many podcasts while I'm doing dishes, you know. Previously I was in the car 2 hours each way to work, so I had, you know, I could throw in a lot of podcasts. And Craig is there too. He's kind of a commuter guy.
Yeah.
So yeah, when we started our podcast, Craig and I, we didn't have businesses. Like, we had aspirations.
Yeah.
I was dicking around with budgetpath.com, which was an app, a SaaS app to help busy families with their finances.
Mm.
And I had been dicking around with that for about 2.5 years, right? So Craig and I started, and we really were trying to find something that would give us just a little traction at a time, right? I need to make $1 online, and then I can ramp that up. I need to make $100. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And until it's breakaway income, freedom income. And that's where we started with that premise, was like, what are we going to do? And we even tried to do some accountability tricks, like we were going to have like a contest. Like, if you didn't meet your goals, you had to give $10 to charity or something like that. And we thought that was kind of,
I don't know.
It was a little precious. So we didn't end up doing it because, you know, the goal is really the reward enough. You know, the reward is Craig and I both have day jobs. Wouldn't be great if we didn't have those day jobs and we were working for ourselves. That's a pretty nice reward if we stay on target.
Yeah, yeah, totally agree. I mean, yeah, I was in pretty much the same situation as you guys. So when texting originally started, I wasn't doing anything. I mean, I just moved to America, actually, and I moved to America in 2009. And the way that texting came about was that I'd been listening to Twit, you know, This Week in Tech.
Mm-hmm.
So I obviously been listening to that in the UK when I was over there. And when I moved here, I literally obviously didn't know anyone. So I listened to This Week in Tech and quite liked the vibe of Jason Calacanis. So I was paying a little more attention to the stuff he was doing. And he did This Week in Startups. And the very first episode that he did, my co-host Jason Roberts called in and talked through a problem that he had, which was he'd created this app called Prezo. It uh-huh. was great. A lot of code. It was out there, but he didn't know what to do with it. So he kind of asked Jason Calacanis. And I was just a regular listener, and I kind of checked out Prezo.com, and on the about page it said, you know, my name's Jason Roberts, I live in Pasadena, which was kind of just down the road from me. So I sent him an email and said, hey, I'm new in town, want to meet up? So we spoke a few times by Skype and met up, and it just sounded like a podcast to me every time I spoke to him. So that was kind of how that began. And Plugio itself, just like you guys, we, you know, I didn't have anything on the go. I just made it to because the first thing we spoke about, literally the very first conversation we had, was Twitter, because that was all the rage in 2010 when we started. And I decided to use Twitter to, like, you know, advertise the show. And it was just I thought the best way to use Twitter was to go around and grab good stories and tweet them out, you know, be kind of generous. So I would find good stories and tweet them out a few times a day. And it was kind of annoying. And I knew that if I made a little script to do that, that would be save me time.
Right.
So I made a script to, like, you know, queue up the stories. But then I thought, wow, I should just plug an RSS feed, you know, plug a bunch of RSS feeds into this, so that I could just go through them and, like, click a button. So I don't even have to do the copy and paste part anymore. And that was really the beginning of Plugio, which actually is very an interesting point about that, is that that probably sounds very familiar to Buffer.
And that's Plugio, exactly what I was thinking, yeah.
Right. So Plugio, there's a lot of lessons that I learned from Plugio. I'll just give you, like, a little hint about some of those. So one really, really big lesson was that to do one thing well. And I really did not understand that versus the Buffer guys. So I started Plugio a long time before they started Buffer. But I was really kind of into the make your customers happy kick. And so you know what happens there, you know? Like, their customers have a lot of feature requests. So I got the minimum version out in 3 months. But customers came back with so many feature requests. And I kind of honored them all. And I built a Twitter client. I built RSS feeds. I built scheduling. I built all sorts of stuff. And because I was so kind of focused in the weeds there, I didn't even think about things like content marketing, integration marketing, all that stuff that Buffer were able to do, because they just built one thing really well. And basically the drip feed on Plugio was a subsection of a settings screen.
Right.
You know, versus that was the entire Buffer app. But it was the minimum viable kind of usefulness that he captured very, very well there. And then just when you create that, when you've got that really small thing that's just really useful in the most minimum viable way, it gives you the opportunity to just do so much more, pay so much more attention to marketing and growing the business.
Yeah, I think when you have a really specific thing you do or product that you're marketing, it's easy to understand your customers too.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think Ken and I probably both getting at that now that we have something that we're doing, and they're both super specific, is that, I mean, my tagline for Podcast Motor is podcast editing and production for self-funded businesses. And that's like 100 customers maybe, right? I mean, it's maybe 500, but that's not a lot, right? And I think it's really easy when I talk to people, you know, it's the exact conversation they want to have. And I think Ken probably is seeing the same thing. So I think that's something we've done well.
You have done well. And, like, that was a perpetual problem for me, was because basically Plugio was three apps in one. It was a Twitter client that was kind of like an optimized Twitter client. It was a content scheduler, and it was like a CMS for tweets. It was really difficult. Like, what do you say on the homepage? So I just kind of ended up saying three things. Like the main tagline I got was, you know, get your life back with time saving tools. But it was very difficult to sell the true value of it. I never really got to it, you know. So would you like to hear some of the numbers?
Yeah, it would be great to hear the numbers.
Oh, we one of the things we do on Texting is we're pretty radically transparent. Not ridiculously, but quite a lot. But certainly about things like numbers and stuff, maybe not so much deep political opinions. we're much more, you know, less likely to talk about a deep political subject than we are about how much we earn.
Right. All right.
So, so basically Plugio was launched in 2010 and I sold it in 2014. The peak revenue was around 4,000 a month. I had around an average of 200 to 250 customers, but that kind of, you know, went up and down a little bit. I sold it for 90,000 and the total net was about 250,000 over 3.5 years. So it's, you know, it's like lifestyle. It's not a major exit. Ken, when we started talking, you were saying, hey, so you're sitting back on the beach
yeah,
drinking martinis. No, it's not quite like that. But I would say this is like, if you're on a housing ladder, this is like my first, you know, my starter home.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
It was a lot of fun, and I learned a lot of lessons.
Why did you choose to sell it and exit?
Ah, good question. The real reason is because you know, they say kind of do what you really want to do, and I'd kind of lost a lot of passion for it. Apart from anything else, basically, and this goes to one of the big lessons that I learned, is don't build on someone else's platform. So building on Twitter's platform, it's like building something on quicksand. Like, yeah, you just never know what they're going to do one day to the next. I mean, they change the rules. They can cut you off.
Yeah, they had some of the biggest API rule changes, right?
Oh, just unbelievable. But not only that, like, I had, you know, 200 customers, and then they just cut me off because of something, you know, some rule or regulation. Some sub person at the company would not like it, and then they just, you know, turn it off. Oh, because I had this capability of, like, friending a lot of people at one time, for example. So if that was automated, then they'd cut you off. So in the end, I just had to put in like a little manual step to for the person to basically say, it's kind of a pop-up that says, I agree that I have selected all the checkboxes manually, kind of thing. And then they kind of click it, and then it selects the checkboxes. So it was just, you just have to do weird tricks and tweaks. And anyway, so to answer your question, I'm kind of going around the houses here, but to answer your question, that's kind of the main reason why. And then the second reason is that, I didn't understand that I could do something, some of the things that I've recently learned in the Traction book by Gabriel Weinberg. So, you know, as a kind of group, we get smarter as we go on, you know, at the startup crowd. And the stuff that Gabriel Weinberg brings to us with Traction is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if I had known that, like, that would have made a big difference. But I think I also had lost my passion for it as well. So if I still don't plug here right now and I saw that Traction stuff, I probably would not do anything about it because I just don't have the passion there.
Mm. Got it. Well, Craig, I don't know if I told you this. I I started talking to Justin on the Slack channel we're both in because I saw some traffic happening in my mastermind jam, Google Analytics, from the discuss.bootstrap.fm forums. So I tracked down the thread that was sending traffic my way, and somebody had mentioned that Ken Wallace had built a mastermind finding service. And I'm like, huh, how did this come up? So I scroll up, and the original post was from Justin. Hey, guys, what do you think of this idea? What would, how would you feel if I started this service that helped you get into a mastermind group? And my sphincter tightened up quite a bit when I was reading that.
You're getting shanked.
Yeah, because, you know, I've listened. It's like a celebrity comes in and steals your business idea. To me, you know, Justin's internet famous. He's got a successful SaaS app. He knows how to do this shit. And here I am, a guy working, you know, nights and weekends on this. There's no way he's going to eat my lunch, right? So,
right.
So we started talking, and I was telling him, you know, what I'm up to, what's going on with it. And so by and by, we started talking on about how he's going about validating what his next thing is going to be. And the Mastermind Finder service that he was thinking about was one of many ideas that he's been kicking around. And I've been really interested in his train of thought on how he's going about narrowing down all the possibilities. Because Justin, you showed me, you know, an idea in the fitness space to help personal trainers. You built a mobile app. Can you tell us a little bit about what you've been doing?
Yeah, sure. Well, so first of all, it's, you know, I should probably let you know that I have a full-time job. I'm CTO of a company called Modern Teacher. And what we're doing is we're basically, it sounds bad to say, but I don't want to say we're modernizing the classroom because that sounds kind of patronizing. But what we're doing is we're basically creating a system where you can use tablets in the classroom, and a teacher can teach a classroom of kids, and all the kids have tablets. The teacher has tablets. The teacher is able to build the lessons on the tablets, and basically, it's just that's what it is. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's another part to it where we used to be called Digidoo for digital education, and myself and my team had built that platform. We've just recently merged with this other company called Modern Teacher. And what they do is they are consultants. So they basically go in and consult about this. So it was a perfect marriage of companies because they didn't have the technology, but they were consulting about it.
Right.
And we didn't have the into the school in the same way that they do because they're all ex-district heads. So they're totally kind of know how to talk to people who run school districts.
Got it.
So
Huge business, right?
Exactly. So that's my day job. But I've always had a side project, and it's just because I love startups. It's like, you know, some people play soccer, some people play tennis. I just have a side project. That's what I do, and I always like to have one thing on the side, and then obviously my main job that I kind of focus the rest of the time on. So anyway, since Plugio, there has been a number of businesses, a number of side projects where there's been a number of learnings, and I have not gone forward with them. But one that you might be familiar with is AnyFoo.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So that was something that myself and Jason, so it was something that it was based on an idea that I originally came up with, which was that a lot of times when I start working with clients, it'll be with a new technology, and I'll really want to learn that technology quickly. And I've always thought the best way is to just go out there and hire someone who's really expensive and who can do a screen sharing session with me for a few hours and teach it to me. So that was the idea. And basically, AnyFoo was an expert marketplace.
Can I put the pause button on right there? I've always wanted to ask you, every time I listen to the stories about AnyFoo on the podcast, how does AnyFoo differ from Clarity.fm?
Well, it's a great question. So first of all, AnyFoo was before Clarity, and AnyFoo is also before AirPair.
Okay.
And so you could think that we were talking about this, you know, like a year before Clarity existed. And probably, I'm not saying that we directly influenced those startups, but I do know that they know us, they listen to us, we're friends with them. I would say through the ether, we probably influenced them.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of how does it differ, it doesn't really differ. It's just that we didn't execute.
Got it. Okay. Right? Okay.
You know, Dan did a great execution on it, and we didn't execute. And the main reason for that is because both Jason and myself are technologists. Neither of us wanted to do the hustle. So we kind of both wanted to build it, and neither of us wanted to do the hustle. But so what ended up happening was that, you know, it kind of fizzled out. There was also a little bit of personality clash about working together, and we spoke through that on the show.
Yeah.
But the really big lessons learned there were that we got super hung up on design at the beginning. Like we were just twiddling bits for a long time, mm-hmm. with designers and logos, and I mean a long time, like 3 months, like before any code.
And it felt like forever that you guys were talking about how you were going to pay people.
Right. That wasn't a solved problem at the time, though. So we, you know, that like Stripe or Balance didn't exist. There was no service that would do that kind of thing. So we did have to basically build our own service like that by cobbling it together from a few other people who offered services, like one company who mailed out checks. There just wasn't an electronic way to do it at that time.
Hmm.
You know, like the kind of payment marketplaces didn't exist. So, and it was the cheapest way to get in, you know, to get in to do that rather than starting to get involved with ACH.
Yeah.
So anyway, I mean, that was it. Basically, we our qualities were too similar. Neither of us wanted to do the marketing, and we got a bit too hung up on the details. So those were the big lessons there.
Interesting. What was next after AnyFoo?
So then I kind of started working on a bit of time went past, and kicking around a lot of different ideas. But I decided that the choose your partner wisely was a big deal, right? So I really wanted to choose good partners. So with the next project, it was a project called Disco that I worked on with Joanna Wiebe and Lance Jones.
Mm-hmm.
So you may have heard of Joanna Wiebe from Copy Hackers.
Oh, yeah.
So I started building a tool, you know, my own tool, which was a little tool, like a thumbs up, thumbs down voting tool that was a widget that you'd put on your website. The idea was to get customer feedback.
Yes.
And I sent it to Rob Walling, and he said, you know what, I think Joanna and Lance are doing something like this. So I was like, oh, cool. So I called them up and spoke through it with them, and we kind of came to an agreement. You know, we should do something together because, you know, you guys are amazing at marketing and I'm pretty good at tech. So, you know, we kind of filled each other out that way. So we worked on it. But as it turned out, I built the whole thing out. But what we realized at the end was the specific product that we went for was an exit survey tool. So basically, it's like a shopping cart abandonment tool. So what it would do is it would pop up in your shopping cart and it would try and stop you from abandoning the cart by offering you kind of gamifying discounts.
Ooh.
So it would, so basically, if you were in the cart for like 10 seconds or whatever, it would pop up a thing saying, hey, have a 5% discount. Tell us, are you a girl or a boy? So you'd answer. And then it'd say, wait, you can get a 10% discount if you answer this next question. So then they'd click that. Wait, you can get a 15% question. So it kind of like they feel like they'd earned it and they were in the shopping cart and it was like this coupon that they just got there. So it's a pretty good idea, right?
Yeah. Do you agree? Yeah, great idea.
So what we discovered, and unfortunately this was discovered after I built all the tech, we discovered that it was going to be hard to set to kind of bootstrap this and sell it to smaller players. This was something that needed to be more enterprisey. And so there was going to be another 6 to 9 months worth of build out on top of the build out that I'd already done. So we just kind of decided, you know what, let's just kind of cut our losses because we still don't truly know whether it's going to work. And it's going to be a super, super big investment for Justin. So that was why we moved on with that. So really the lesson learned there was, you know, even if you have amazing partners, you still need to validate before you build anything.
So. Yeah, I think that's the interesting thing there, I think, is that there's certain models and businesses that you can bootstrap easily. And there's certain that even if the idea and the implementation is good, the environment that your customers live in and the business model just isn't conducive to bootstrapping.
I'm so glad you said that because that brings me on to the next failure. So then I decided, okay, you know, I'm going to just try and do something on my own. And I am going to do something in a space that I think is interesting and that I know there's loads of money. And I decided to go into on-demand. So basically, I built an on-demand fast food delivery service. And when I say I built it, I really built it. I built out the iOS app, dispatch system, the payment marketplace, this time with, you know, fully integrated with Stripe, and a courier app. And it has a beautiful design, and it's a great app. It's still on the App Store. You can check it out. Search for Lyte, L-Y-T-E. And when you install it, enter Pasadena as your location, and you'll be able to browse all the restaurants. So I have a tendency to be quite optimistic, like a lot of entrepreneurs. So my optimism in this case was I kind of knew it was validated because Postmates are out there. They're doing this. It's a very fragmented market, but there's lots of people who are doing it in this fragmented market. So I wasn't too stressed about could this thing work or not. Now, that may have been foolish, but that was my opinion. So I did launch it. And when I launched it, the first thing I did was I hired a guy to be my first courier. And we basically went around Old Town Pasadena. We handed out cards and we hustled. And we got about 20 orders at that time. And people ordered through the system and the system worked. Everything was great. And it was all looking good. But the first downside was he was an 18-year-old kid. And he said after like day two, see ya. So there was that. Then the second thing is I thought, okay, you know, I need to do something a little more scaled. And also from those basic tests, I realized there were some problems. Like people were installing the app, but they weren't signing up because the sign-up flow was too complicated. So I kind of went away and reworked it and put in a Facebook single-click sign-up and just made some of the journeys better. So then with the second launch, I did something bigger. I basically distributed 5,000 cards to 5,000 homes around the restaurants that I was going for. So basically, I was just focused on one small strip mall with a McDonald's and a Starbucks. So of those 5,000 cards, they were pushed out, and in came two orders.
Wow.
So I mean, and that is 5,000 actual homes who have an actual card advertising this business that are right there, and there was two orders and two installs in total.
Wow.
So that was quite a big lesson for me, because I kind of know, I deeply believe that those businesses can work because I'm seeing them working. But I also realize the reason why they work is because they have a crap load of funding thrown at them.
Right.
Like they have, like the, if you think about it, the hustle worked. You know, we handed out maybe 300, 400 cards and we got 20 orders. That hustle worked. But you've got to pay someone $10 to $15 an hour to do that. The other problem with this app is that of all the orders that came in, I couldn't fulfill 50% of them because I didn't have someone to do it. So to fulfill the orders, you have to basically have to create this kind of false supply. So you have to spend $10 to $15 an hour just to have someone there. And to cover 12 hours a day, you know, that's like a couple of thousand a week right there.
Wow.
So that's two reasons. So first of all, it costs a lot to acquire the customers. And secondly, it costs a lot to just operate that business. But there's also another thing. When I did have the courier for the 2 days, I did get him to deliver a few things to me. And I felt a little bit guilty. And I said to him, oh, sorry, man. I'm really sorry for asking you to do that. But what I realized is you shouldn't build a business where you feel guilty about the service.
Ha.
Yeah, right?
Right.
So, okay. So my lessons learned for Lite are only build things that you truly love. You know, on demand is not easily bootstrapped, and take existence proof of other people being successful at something with a grain of salt. Just because Postmates are doing it, don't assume that you can do it.
So frankly, a lot of false starts probably, right? And things that you validated early-ish on without spending a ton of time and money on them. But so you learned a lot from those experiences. Now, I know you and Ken have been talking about validating new ideas. You know, all that leads you down some pretty specific roads, I would think. Like, what are you looking at now, and what's like completely out the window from what you learned in the past?
Well, you see, with Lite and Disco, both those two kind of, I guess, for want of a better word, failures or failed to launches, they're both kind of like 6 months development work. So that's kind of a year thrown away there, mm-hmm. if you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the big reason to validate upfront. More than anything, that's the big reason. Because they're both beautiful. They're both designed beautifully. They both work beautifully. They're both built out completely. But still, without validating that it's actually a valid business, what good is it? So I think I'm going to become an expert at validation. That's what I'm going to do. I don't want to waste any more years like that. You know, what I've been talking about with Ken is, as he mentioned, I've thrown quite a few ideas at him. And there's also another guy who I've been speaking to in the same bootstrapped Slack called Devin Thayer.
Yes.
Devin Thayer. And he sent me a really interesting matrix from the guys at Fizzle, which basically just helps you think through all of the different things that you're interested in and determine if one of them is a good thing to do a business in. So I went through that and I thought about all these things. You know, I'm interested in plant-based food. I'm interested in salt DevOps as a software. I'm interested in PHP. I'm interested in Laravel. I'm interested in startups. I'm interested in podcasting. So anyway, I built a spreadsheet and there's this is a kind of a system that allows you to quantify. So you type in, you know, you have a line for each item, like, do you know any thought leaders in this space? Then type in, you know, 1 to 10, you know, how effective you think that you, how effective you think you are for that question. So I went through all of them, and honestly, startups, you know, the startup space, people building startups, just was at least twice as many points as anything else. It kind of made me reevaluate my position. So I just thought about problems with startups. I've just been listing all different problems with my experience with startups. And I suppose a big one that came to mind is just general communication, the communications issue with remote work. So do you guys do remote work?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's... So Podcast Motor has a team of 7 people plus myself. Right. And, it's tough. I mean, we use, you know, our big tools are Trello and Slack. and we do almost everything we need to do with those two tools. But it's still tough.
Well, yeah, and like this, so from when I first started talking to Ken, I had an idea. And Ken, I think you'll agree, it's kind of shifted quite substantially from that idea.
It has.
So the first idea I had was, it was basically, you know, build the ocean kind of idea.
Right.
It was to try and solve all the problems that you just alluded to there. And basically what I was thinking was, okay, let's create this place where we merge the conference call with a thing like Slack, but something cleverer than that, something where you can kind of get daily digests and where it'll do transcriptions of everything that's said, and you'll have like this transcription area, and then you can kind of use that and pull that in, and you can send kind of, for want of a better word, Slack each other and add images and take notes and create Jira tickets and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, after talking that through with Ken, who I think did think it was, you know, vaguely interesting because of the problems that there are in the communications, it did seem like it was something that was going to take another 6 months,
yeah.
You know, minimum to kind of build that out. So I tried to like hone it down to just the absolutely smallest component, the single product component that was interesting. And what I thought would be really interesting would be a tool where we even right now, we could just plug in this tool and it records this conference that we're having and it transcribes it using software transcription. And then it just gives us a nice little interface where we can quickly turn that transcription into, you know, a podcast transcript or stand-up minutes for your daily stand-up or, and you know, many different things like that. So I'll just go from the landing page that I've created here. So the title of the landing page is, well, first of all, the name's called Spoke, S-P-O-K-E, as in it was spoken, mm-hmm. the past tense of speak. So the idea is instant notes for all your team's meetings, transcribed, summarized, and searchable. So basically, you just click record, and Spoke records the meeting from your computer mic or from any dial-in conference call. So basically, it's kind of like this unified system that will plug into conference systems. It'll plug into your computer. You can do it from your iPhone. And, you know, it will instantly create a search and playback scenario. So think of something like Basecamp where you have projects. So you could go to Spoke and you, and by the way, this, you know, I'm thinking through all this stuff. So I do welcome your feedback if you have any thoughts. But you know how with Basecamp you have projects, right? And projects are usually team-oriented. So what I'm thinking is that each project is a team and has its own phone number and its own email address. And so that at any time that your team is, you know, on a WebEx meeting or something, they can just invite Spoke as an attendee, their team, and it will just start transcribing and it'll put all that stuff in a place, which will be like yourteam.spoke.com, whatever. Mm-hmm. And people will be able to go there and they'll quickly be able to search all the conversations that they've had over the last year. Because that's something I find myself doing, you know. If I go to, with Google, with Gmail, I do that a lot, right? I think of something, I'm like, oh, someone said that to me, you know. And I search it and I find it. And it's like, it's kind of this external brain. So what I'm thinking is, how cool would it be if all your company conversations were in this external brain? So are you with me so far?
So far, so good for me.
Mm-hmm. So then there's this other piece, and I just kind of mocked it up today that I sent to Ken, which is that you can, it's this kind of editor where it'll show the full transcription on the left, and you can just play back the audio, and you can just basically drag across any piece of text and click copy, and then it'll copy it into a standard markup editor on the right. And so you'll be able to quickly create podcast transcriptions, or you'll be able to create meeting minutes. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I told him that was pretty genius for podcast post-production. Because if you saw a time-stamped transcript on the left, you know, just imagine Mixer G or Startups for the Rest of Us, where they print the complete transcript for every episode in their show notes. But yeah. Imagine that on the left-hand side, you know, a page split 50-50 vertically. On the left-hand side, it's a scrolling transcript you can highlight. So if you and I were talking, we said, you know, we'll include that link in the show notes. We'll include a link to Disco in the show notes. the podcast, whoever's doing the post-production work, would see that fly by in the transcript, and they could just drag that over and do the appropriate markup. I mean, I just think that's huge, because it would already be written out for them from the computer transcription service.
Right.
They can still edit it or make it a hyperlink or post it into an email, whatever needs to happen to that afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking that, you know, the other good thing about that is, like, the whole integrations piece comes to mind. So you could integrate the output into your WordPress, or you could send it as an email to your team.
Yeah.
Or you could, you know, post it as an attachment to Slack. Like, I think a big part of this will be integrations, which kind of is exciting to me, because it's a simple concept. It's just making computer transcription useful, but also putting a team-based workflow there. I think it's got legs, you know, but we'll see. What do you think needs to happen for me? This is my question to you guys. What do you think needs to happen for me to say, yep, it's a good idea, move forward with it?
Have someone pay you for it.
Yeah. You got to talk to customers.
I think, no, and this is, I mean, Ken and I talked about this last week. I talked about this in my mastermind group. I think that, frankly, people are a bunch of pussies about building stuff before they get paid for it, or at least have real conversations with people that are interested in paying them money for it. They might not actually give them the credit card, but I wouldn't go spend a dollar or an hour to develop something unless I had a really good sense that someone was going to really want to pay me money for it. And I wouldn't have to go beg them for it. It would be, wow, I'm glad I found this solution. Here's my money.
So, yeah, I mean, I've been thinking along the same lines. So I remember back to this process. I mean, I kind of went through the same process with Plugear and, you know, did the whole collect a few thousand email addresses and then launched it and then kind of tried to convert those people into paying customers. It would have been nicer to have, like, pre-done that, you know? So, but I'm just wondering, how does one do that? Are you thinking of, like, is that only through a verbal conversation, or do you think that you should have a credit card form on the site? I mean, or do you think, I mean, what are you thinking? On the landing page, I mean.
Yeah. So what I would do, so I'm in a, not a similar boat, but we have a product that we're going to start creating soon, and I won't start creating it until I get 10 people pay me $100 for it. And that's not going anywhere near the cost of development, but it's a good sign that there's another 10 or 100 people, they'll pay me $100 for it. And it's, you know, it's lifetime access to a tool that will be, you know, maybe $100 a month. But those people give you early investment because they have the confidence in you, and they're essentially pre-ordering it for a significant discount, knowing that it's still, you know, 6 months away.
How do you meet those people, Craig?
Yeah. I know those people already in my industry. And so Justin, you probably know those people too. You know, it's just a matter of, you know, the people that have the type of business that are integrated with Slack and Trello and whatever else, those people are and have remote teams, like the guys at Buffer or whatever, that would benefit from having this knowledge base and have it be able to be searchable and distributed in pieces and stuff.
You're right. The Buffer team is probably a good one. I'm just taking notes here.
Buffer is 100% remote. Another one is Basecamp. You know, Jason Fried's team is all remote.
Zapier.
A smaller one that might be more approachable because he's in the microconf space is you need a budget and talk to, oh my goodness, his name just slipped my...
It's called You Need a Budget?
Yeah.
The only thing about the people you're mentioning is they're kind of, you know, internet famous and heavy hitters. Like, do you think that it's right to go for those kind of people or just kind of regular people?
That's why I suggested the You Need a Budget guy, because he's very approachable. Hold on a second.
Jesse
Meekum. Yeah. Thank you.
But so my question is, why... What about the fact that we're both part of these startup the Slack groups? So, for example, there's 1,000 people in the Slack group that we're member in the Bootstrapped one, and there's I think 3,000 people in the Hash Startup one.
Yeah.
What about just saying, hey guys, check out this landing page. Tell me if you're interested in it and you're willing to give me $100 right now.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing wrong with that. Yeah, that's what they're there
for. So something I think that does, and it's an important part of, you know, like becoming a master product validator, is there's a bias in talking to people that you know, because they're more inclined to buy already than someone who's a relative cold lead. So I think going to your friends or these people that you know that might want to buy is a little bit of a leg up versus even people in the Slack group who are already your target audience, but they aren't necessarily, you know, warmed up on the topic, to give you that kind of unfair advantage.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And, you know, this is, I mean, part of my decision to work in a space that could help those kind of people. So basically distributed small team types of people, but maybe even medium-sized teams as well. But is the fact that because I co-host a podcast and because I've been a speaker at MicroConf and because I've been pretty involved in this space, that kind of is the unique, you know, the unfair advantage there. So, but I do kind of agree that it would be good to go for some of the cold sales first.
Yeah, I mean, I have a couple of Facebook groups that I'm a part of that I plan on sort of marketing to, and a Slack channel. But yeah, I think those are good because they're confined audiences. You know those people. It's not as good as an email list, but it's sort of immediate too.
The one thing that I'm noticing is as I'm developing this out, I'm getting more emotionally attached to it. And, you know, that's kind of a bad thing. Like, I kind of need to be pretty dispassionate and just able to fail fast and axe it if it doesn't look like it's going anywhere. What are your thoughts on that?
That's a struggle that Craig and I have had tremendously as we're going through the roller coaster here. I was really personally passionate about the HIPAA guide for developers I was working on for months as well. And then eventually it became obvious that no one wanted to give me money for it, and I just had to shoot it in the head. It's an odd fine line you have to walk where you have to be passionate about it to sell it to somebody. I mean, it's hard to sell something you're not really into, right? But on the other hand, you have to be able to fly it at a higher level and give it a critical eye. And you have to be the first person willing to put it down when it's showing signs of age. You know, when people aren't willing to give you money for it and to walk that road with you, then you got to either find a way to make a pivot or move on to the next thing.
What are your thoughts about, because one thing I do feel is that even though I don't believe that the guys copied AnyFu with AirPair or Clarity, I do believe that it was kind of in the ether through our 2,000 followers, and then they spoke to people and they spoke to people, and then that may have bounced around and influenced them in some way. What do you think about the idea of being completely transparent as you build out a business versus being secretive?
Personally here, I don't know what Craig's thoughts are on this, but my thoughts have developed a lot on this because I see the buffers being incredibly transparent and some other businesses, down to personality-based businesses like Pat Flynn's business and Jean-Louis Dumas of Entrepreneur on Fire. They're 100% transparent. They show their income reports, and they have a spreadsheet you can download and pour over their income sources. And I talked to Thomas Smale from FE International about this on a podcast interview that we did, because some parts of me thinks that too much transparency is not a good thing in growing the business and in, you know, maturing the business and eventually someday selling it. But on the other hand, I think to get back to your question, you asked if it should be either secretive or wide open and transparent. I think the truth is somewhere in the middle. I think there are some things that you can be transparent about, like your learnings. Like Dan Norris is really incredibly transparent about what he's learned and what he's failed at on his blog for WP Curve. When he talks about his journey through Informally and his stumblings to get to where he's at today, he's very transparent. But you can't download his income report. I think there's a line you have to draw.
Stumbling is a good word. When I think of my startup career, I think of myself as stumbling along.
You know,
I like that.
Just personally, I also feel that I have a lot of trouble being transparent. I told Rob this privately. You know, I've meant for months to start a accountability thread in the Micropreneur Academy forums, and because I've seen how that can help keep people accountable and you get valuable feedback. But on the other hand, I've got some hidden block inside that just won't let me create that forum topic and pour everything out every week of what I'm going through. And I'm not sure exactly what that is. On the other hand, going to some forums like the discuss.bootstrap.fm, there's a tremendous community of entrepreneurs who are really generous with their time, and they'll give you feedback and kick things around like we're doing right now on this call. But that community is wide open and indexable by Google. And, you know, I've got a day job, and I don't want a customer, you know, hitting, you know, my exit strategy in their Google search results. So right. it's a weird thing. I've yet to find the right balance.
But you're happy to talk about it on air, though.
It's a lot, frankly. That didn't come without some reservation. Craig and I talked about it as we were starting, you know, how much of a veil we're going to put on things. And then in talking with either customers or coworkers or colleagues or managers, it's like not everybody's as savvy as the three of us are. Not everybody listens to podcasts or even knows what the hell it is.
Right.
And
right.
So to download a podcast and a port, you know, frankly, our episodes are way too damn long. So it's like an hour sometimes of us just talking about our business. No one's going to do that. And so, yeah, in that last 50, you know, the last 10 minutes of a 55 minute show, I might reveal something about my long-term goals that might give concern, but they would have to have listened to the whole show by then. You know what I mean? So I'm not too worried about that today.
Yeah, you know, I think that transparency for transparency's sake doesn't do a lot for me. I think if there's a strategic advantage for it, and there's a lot of options that could qualify for, you know, valid reasons to be transparent, then it's a good thing. I think that, you know, you look at Barometrics and those guys and Buffer again, that you know, they're big into the transparency thing. I think that, you know, they were kind of first to the game with it a bit. And y'all's podcast was too.
You know, Peldy is the godfather of that stuff. Peldy from Boston.
Oh, is he really? Interesting.
Yeah, he was the first guy to just really open up his numbers. But he'd even stopped publicizing his numbers because he kind of got a bit embarrassed about them. They got a bit too big. He was like, I don't really want to say that I'm earning, you know, $500,000. Now he's obviously even, you know, way past that. But
yeah,
I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. But I guess, you know, so the short answer is I don't see anything wrong with it. I would want to have a real good reason to do it, because I think there is a fair bit of downside to it. You know, whether it's someone copying you, or if you do decide to sell it in the future, what does that do for your valuation?
There are businesses where thinking about your valuation at time of sale don't matter, right? For Pat Flynn, that doesn't matter, because how can Pat Flynn possibly sell his business, right, without himself still being the figurehead on the front of it? How can John Lee Dumas possibly sell that business? Now, the Entrepreneur on Fire training courses, yeah, he could sell that, I guess, but it's going to be really tough without his face on it and him marketing it. Pat Flynn, he's got a smart podcast player. I guess he could sell that part off. But the point is, these businesses, they can only be helped by the transparency, because it creates a kind of furor around the topic of, wow, this guy's really doing, he's really making the money in the way that he's espousing on his website. And perhaps I could do it too.
I like that. I mean, that's the kind of thing that I've been inspired by, you know, maybe 5 years ago. So I do think that it works in that kind of context. But I suppose I am obviously going to be transparent in the sense of talking about the idea and what the idea is. But I do have like some, I don't know, paranoia that tells me you shouldn't do that, because then other people will do this business. Yeah. And then you'll have more competition. I mean, it's kind of like they say, if you have a good idea, you'll probably have to spend more time ramming it down people's throats just to explain it to them than anything else.
I disagree with that. I think if it's a great idea, well, you know, the fascinating part to me is the businesses that you've started, Justin, are radically different than the businesses that I have. Like, I keep a little notebook of business ideas, right? Mm-hmm. But they're much more in line with Dane Maxwell and the foundations. You know, let's make an app that helps pool cleaners log that they were there to open the pool. You know, and you're saying, let's make an app to revolutionize the way that we deliver food to people. You know, I never think in the Elon Musk Hyperloop kind of business ways. I always think of the more mundane, let's scale something that already exists kind of a way.
Well, I hope that with Spoke, I'm going more in that direction.
Well, that's one of the things I asked you today was, you know, who are your competitors in the space? What's the next best alternative to somebody today?
Right.
And I guess Craig is a good person to ask about that. How does he solve the problems that you're hoping to solve? He deals extensively with recordings and with the product that comes out of those recordings, the words. You know, he trades in that. You know, how does he do that today?
Yeah,
you took,
I mean, it's very
took the words
manual.
Right out of my mouth.
Yeah. No, I mean, we that's what our whole team is for. I mean, we have 3 part-time people that all they do is write, you know, not transcribe, but, you know, summarize podcast episodes. And it's time intensive for sure. I mean, you can't speed it up really too much. I think our application is a little different because we do craft that into, a pretty compelling blog post. We try to, at least. For business purposes, I would want to have it verbatim so that, like you said, you can search exactly what somebody said and put it in the exact context. But
did you click the link that I sent you in Skype, the little
I did, yeah,
the editor? Do you get that? Does that make sense?
I do, yeah. No, it makes a ton of sense. Yeah, and that's an email. Yeah,
well, actually that's an email.
Or
a
whatever. Yeah,
yeah, I'd switch it up so that can be like a blog post or a, you know,
or a Trello card or a Slack chat or a
yeah. All right, you got $100?
Yeah. Yeah.
Nicely done, sir. Nicely done. That's the way happen, though.
But that's a good point. I mean, I would think about, I guess, 2 questions. One is, how do you create that transcription?
Well, there's a few different APIs around that are pretty good at it. So Amazon don't have one yet, but Twilio have one, and IBM have one, and there's also stuff that you can set up on, you know, obviously like Linux servers, probably less good versions. So I think what I'll do is I'll play around with a bunch of different versions and find out which one's the best and offers, you know, the best accuracy versus pricing, you know.
Sure. Yeah.
Anything else?
no more objections. Yeah, no, that's...
And again, that's just one possible use case, because I was given Justin the critique that maybe his landing page was too generic, you know. And the advantage of having a generic one is he can have these conversations with a variety of different businesses right now. And I think that's what he needs right now. He needs to get on the street or on the phone or on email or in Slack groups or on the internet forums and say, hey, look at this landing page and let's talk a little bit more about what this could help, you know, in your business. And then once he finds a hot sector, you know, you look, if it's a heat map of conversations, you go for the bright red and say, okay, I really get a lot of feedback from podcast producers, or I really get a lot of feedback from funded startups who need to record board meetings, or I'm getting a lot of interest from development teams and groups that want to record standups and increase productivity that way. Then you narrow it down, then you hone in your message on your landing page and you go back.
I mean, it's kind of interesting. There are products like, you know, a spreadsheet or a Microsoft Word or something that do just work very well in different markets. And I guess this could possibly be one of those products. But I agree with you that it would be good to find people who had the kind of burning need for this.
Yeah. Well, the difference between you and a Microsoft Excel, let's just be honest. Let's get back to the funding topic, okay? You don't have billions in a war chest somewhere literally hordes of people that talk to businesses about their needs. You don't have that. You are Justin, and you need to be able to find, you know, the first 10 people that show you any interest in this to prove it's valid.
Well, you especially bring up a good point, because the editor. So obviously, an editor that's going to create podcast transcripts is going to be slightly different to one that's going to create emails, is going to be slightly different to one that's going to create minutes for a stand-up. So even just from the point of view of doing things that don't scale and just focusing on one, you know, as Paul Graham says, do things that don't scale. Mm-hmm. Just focusing on one kind of core concept, that would make sense. And then think about scaling it into the other use cases afterwards.
Right.
I mean, it's it it kind of is a bit like, if you think about it like this, it is a bit like a buffer, because, you know, buffer just does this basic thing, but then they add new integrations. So if you think about each integration being, in this case, like a niche,
mm-hmm.
so you could add those new kind of export capabilities.
Yeah.
But just start on a good niche.
Yeah, like your screenshot there on that right-hand pane. Right now in your screenshot, it's an email. But mm-hmm. maybe you pick one thing. Maybe it's a blog post, or, you know, whoever's giving you the most interest back. Make that right-hand pane, give them what they need. And you know, as a tech guy, that it's real easy to plug in a different kind of module there. Make it a tabbed interface so I can switch to email view or blog view or markdown or whatever it might be. That's easy for you, right? But it's hard to explain in a landing page that I can do all these things. It's much mm-hmm. easier just to have a screenshot that shows the one thing that's for the targeted group that is giving you the most attention right now. Because you also know that once you get some traction there and some revenue and some interest, it's real easy for you to throw up another landing page 6 months from now to target one more group. And then you add another, you know, organically, you add one more niche, and then you just keep gobbling up niches.
I agree with you, but it's like you were saying to me earlier on today, you know, just do, with regard to you saying do something specific,
mm-hmm.
you said to me earlier today, but just ship this. It's ready to go. Start talking to customers.
Yeah.
So I think that is my next step versus, you know, having a guess at what that right panel should be.
That's what
I talk to those customers, and then based off that, then like, okay, now I'm going to make the right panel, as you say, like yeah. follow the heat spots.
Yeah, I hope I'm not contradicting myself here. What I was getting at is, you right now it's generic. That's good enough so you can talk to a wide variety of people. Once yeah. you get any feedback from any of those segments, right, you might talk to 6 or 7 different niches of people. Once one of those starts giving you some interest, then you can talk about, okay, let's just hone this message for that niche and then go down that path as far as it takes you.
I mean, podcasting, you know, sounds good talking to Craig, but my only worry about podcasting is that I know they don't have a lot of money in general, podcasters.
Yeah. Yep.
So that's kind of my issue with that. I know who do have a lot of money, lawyers.
There you go. Yeah.
but I'm sure that, you know, I mean, I think that the thing that I hope that it would be take off quite well with companies and startups and brainstorms and daily stand-ups, because that's the thing that I like. But, you know, I won't web myself to that. We'll see,
you know,
what people
say. That was one of my first thoughts, actually, talking about lawyers, is the liability of having a daily meeting recorded and then transcribed.
Mm-hmm.
Might be more documentation than a lot of people want.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Which is right. fine. It doesn't have to be for everybody, but that's definitely something I would think about.
Another thing is, you know, doctors, after every consultation, they go into a voice recorder in their pocket and they speak about what happened in the session. And then somebody comes back later and transcribes all that and puts it in the patient record.
Yeah. So you're just putting all the people they like out of work.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe they don't like these people. Maybe it's a service they use. Maybe it's, you know what I mean?
So they're mostly typing it these days.
Yeah. Maybe they're just typing it themselves. There's a ton of iOS apps out there to help them do this, to help them take the notes and then play it back later. But then, you know, if you go after doctors, then you got to think about HIPAA, you know, and those kind of laws in the US.
Yeah. So I think the best thing is just to reach out to people. Well, actually, that's a good point. So any listeners of yours who are listening to this, if you want to have a look at this idea and in a bit more detail, and I guess give your email address or give your credit card number or something, or get in contact with me to discuss how you think that it, to discuss why you think you should give me $100 to build this, go to getspoke.net. That's getspoke.net.
Cool. Okay, guys. I think we've prattled on enough. You guys have anything else you want to add?
No, Justin, yeah. It was a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you so much. I guess I was going to say one last thing, which is it'd be great if anyone did want to check out TechZing, our podcast. It's been years since we've done any kind of promotion for it. So that would be kind of awesome. And if you wanted to learn a little bit about what we do and what we talk about, just go to techzingwiki.com. That's techzingwiki.com. Guys, it really has been a pleasure to talk to you. And I've really been excited to talk to you, Ken, for the last few days. You've kind of been revving me up, making me think, yes, I can do something. This is good.
Awesome.
So thank you cool. so much.
Well, all right. It's great to talk to you guys. Cool. Craig, I'll see you again next week.
Yep. See you guys. Thanks.
You've been listening to the Nights and Weekends podcast. If you like the show, go leave us a review. Thanks for listening.
Can you hear this? Hey everyone, Ken here. Thanks for listening to the show. I have a little something extra to share with you today. After we are done recording this episode, Justin and Craig continued the conversation. Justin was smart enough to push forward the customer development conversation he had started earlier. As soon as we sign off from the recording, Justin asks this really important question.
I guess all that remains to be said is, Craig, was that a serious yes about the 100 or no?
And we kind of joke about it. We laugh it off. But it's a real question. We need the answer to that before he can move forward.
No, so I don't know that it would solve our problem, but it is definitely interesting. I won't forget about it. I'll give you that.
So would you like to have, you know, some customer discussions? I mean, just to talk through what might be good for you.
Now, see what he does there? We kind of laughed about the response, but then he gets right back into business. He keeps the intensity up. And Craig is forced to really think about, is this something that would help my business?
Would you like to have, you know, some customer discussions? I mean, just to talk through what might be good for you? Because I want to see if it's too far field from the core simplicity of what I'm trying to create.
Yeah, so I mean, what we would really, you know, what I envision is kind of two things, I guess. One is we do have customers that ask for transcriptions, and so that's obvious that that would be a neat thing.
Okay, so I'll save you the rest. I won't make you listen to the rest of the conversation. The important part is you need to have this conversation with your target customers as early as possible, preferably before you start building a product. So often we hear about founders working for 6 months, a year, 3 years, 5 years, tens of thousands of dollars spent because they think they know what the customer might need. They heard some kind of glimmer of a product idea. They went and sequestered themselves in their basement and perfected what they thought was an amazing product for this customer. They go back to the customer 6 months, 12 months, 18 months later. But once they actually put it in front of customers, zip, zilch. You need to have these uncomfortable conversations with your customers. You need to have these customer development conversations with your customers as early as possible. And the point is, keep the intensity up in the conversation. Don't fill the space in the conversation. Let your customers talk, but keep asking why. Why do they do the things that they do in their business? How do they do the things in their business? It's a world of abundance out there. In every business, there are things that can be streamlined. And in most of these cases, those things that need streamlining is something that you can offer back to them as a service that a business is willing to pay money for. You are trying to get these conversations to a yes or no. Are they willing to pay you money for it? Something where they are forced to think about, am I willing to part with money to have this problem solved for me? Because remember, as a founder, as an entrepreneur, your job is to not get married to your product idea. You're not getting married to your solution. You're getting married to solving a problem. So until you know what the actual problem is, don't get emotionally invested. Don't get so wrapped up in the latest technology and API integrations and all these things that you could cobble together to make this awesome GWiz product. For the majority of businesses that a bootstrapper can tackle and grow and be successful at, you need to just simply fall in love with solving a business problem. And the rest will take care of itself. All right, I've taken up enough of your time. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time, peace out.